This is what should be done by one who is skilled in goodness and who knows the path of peace. Let them be able and upright, straightforward and gentle in speech, humble and not conceited, contented and easily satisfied, unburdened with duties, and frugal in their ways, peaceful and calm, wise and skillful, not proud and demanding in nature. Let them not do the slightest thing that the wise would later reprove, wishing in gladness and in safety, may all beings be happy, whatever living beings there may be, whether they are weak or strong, omitting none, the great or the mighty, medium, short or small, the seen and the unseen, those living near and far away, those born and to be born, may all beings be happy. Let none deceive another, or despise any being in any state. Let none through anger or ill will wish harm upon another, even as a mother protects with her life her child, her only child. So with a boundless heart should one cherish all living beings, radiating kindness over the entire world, spreading upwards to the skies and downwards to the depths, outwards and unbounded, free from hatred and ill will, whether standing or walking, seated or lying down, free from drowsiness. One should sustain this recollection. This is said to be the sublime abiding. I am not holding to false views, but the pure-hearted one, having clarity of vision, being free from all sense desires, is not born again into this world.
Verse 78. One should not associate with bad friends, nor with the immoral. One should associate with good friends and with those who are generous. The story of Therachanda. While living at the Jetavana Monastery, the Buddha spoke verse 78 of this book with a reference to Therachanda. Chanda was the servant who traveled with Prince Siddhartha when he renounced the world and left the palace on horseback. When the prince attained Buddhahood, Chanda also became a bhikkhu. As a bhikkhu, he was very arrogant and bossy. Because of his close connection to the Buddha, Chanda used to say, "I came along with my master." When he left the palace for the forest, at that time I was the only companion of my master and there was no one else. But now Sariputta and Mahamoggallana are saying, "We are the chief disciple and are acting self importantly, when the Buddha sent for him and spoke to him about his behavior, he kept silent but continued to abuse and insult the two chief disciples. Thus, the Buddha sent for him and warned him three times. Still, he did not change. And again, the Buddha sent for Channa and said, "Channa, these two noble bhikkhus are good friends to you. You should associate with them and be friendly with them." Then the Buddha spoke in verse as follows. Verse 78. One should not associate with bad friends, nor with the immoral. One should associate with good friends and with those who are generous. Even though the Buddha gave him repeated warnings and advice, Channa did as he pleased and continued to insult and abuse the bhikkhus. The Buddha, knowing this, said that Channa would not change during the Buddha's lifetime, but after his death, Parinibbana, Channa would surely change. On the day before his Parinibbana, the Buddha called Theravananda to his bedside and instructed him to use the Brahma punishment, Brahma danda, on Channa. That is, for the bhikkhus to simply ignore him and to have nothing to do with him. After the Parinibbana of the Buddha, Channa, learning about the punishment from Theravananda, felt a deep and bitter sorrow for having done wrong, and he fainted three times. Then he admitted his guilt to the bhikkhus and asked for forgiveness. From that moment, he changed his actions and attitude. He also obeyed their instructions in his meditation practice and soon attained arahatship. Thank you.
Stretch or put your body in a more comfortable position. When the body settles down, comfortable in an upright position or a position that's comfortable. And as we progress in the meditation, if the body wants to move, just let it do what it wants. But just do slowly and mindfully. Just start by taking a few deep breaths. attention to the feet. Start to relax the feet, like soft clouds, tingling with sensation. All the tension drains out from the feet into the earth. Aware of the feet. Relax the ankles, like softness of clouds, peaceful, tingling. Drain all tension out through the ankles, through the feet, and into the earth. The lower legs, like softness of clouds, tingling with relaxation. So all tension begins to drain out of the lower legs, through the ankles, the feet, and into the earth. Relax the knees, like the softness of clouds, tingling with relaxation, draining the tension out of the knees, through the lower legs, the feet, and into the earth. Relax the thighs, like soft clouds, tingling with relaxation. The whole of the thighs. Drain any tension out through the knees, the lower legs, the feet, and into the earth. Relax the waist, the hips, and the buttocks, like soft clouds. Tingling and relax this whole region, draining all tension out through into the earth. Just become aware of the belly for a moment. So it moves in time with the breath. Relax the belly and the lower back. Like soft clouds, tingly and relaxed, draining all tension out through the waist, through into the earth. Relax the diaphragm, the solar plexus, and the middle back. Like soft clouds, tingly and relaxed. Welcome in. Draining out all tension through into the belly, the lower back, through the waist, and into the earth. Relax the chest, Become aware of the lungs as they fill up with air and empty. All on their own. Relax the heart. Smile softly in the heart. And sense that smile spread through the whole body. Relax the chest, the lungs, the heart, and the upper back. Like soft clouds, tingly and relaxed. Draining out any tension down through the diaphragm and middle back, down through the belly and lower back, through the waist and into the earth. Relax the shoulders, front of the shoulders, the top of the shoulders, the back of the shoulders. This whole region, so much tension is held. Just relax deeply like soft clouds, tingly in the knees. Drain the tension down through the upper arms, through the elbows, the lower arms, the wrists, the hands, and into the earth. Now relax the upper arms like soft clouds. Drain the tension down through the lower arms, the hands, and into the earth. Relax the elbows like soft clouds, tingly and relaxed. Drain out all tension through the lower arms, the wrists, the hands, and into the earth. Relax the lower arms, deeply relaxed, like soft clouds. All tension drained down through the wrists, the hands, into the earth. Relax the wrists, the hands, and the lines of the hands, like soft clouds, tingly and relaxed, draining out all tension down through into the earth. Relax the neck and throat. Just become aware for a moment of the air as it passes through the throat. All on its own. Relax the neck and throat deeply, like soft clouds, tingly and relaxed. Drain out all tension down through the torso, through the waist, and into the earth. Relax the chin and jaw. A slight smile at the corners of the mouth. A slight smile at the corners of the eyes. Relax the lips and tongue. The cheeks and cheekbones. The nose. Under the eyes. The temples. Relax the eyelids and the eyes. So much tension is held in the eyes. Just see if we can let that tension fade away. Smiling at the corner of the eyes. Settling down. Relax the eyebrows, the forehead, all the lines of the forehead beginning to vanish. Relax the scalp and ears, and the whole head, and the whole body, like soft clouds, tingly and relaxed, welcoming any sensations that are remaining. Becoming friends with this present moment. Now if there's a difficult part of the body remaining, just zoom in on that and welcome it. Maybe it feels like a knot, just see if you can untie that knot. Or if it feels like it's being pulled on, maybe you can loosen off. So it too starts to become like soft clouds, tingly and relaxed. Our body, we just allow our bodies to take care of themselves now. So borders of the body begin to expand into the vastness, into the infinite. His body is a sense of freedom and floating. The mind is radiant and alert. We put down the body and bring our attention to the mind. First of all, we put down the past. Whatever's happened in the past, it's done with and finished. And put down the past. Whatever might happen in the future, even a million thoughts, and it still might be something different. So we put down the future. And then imagination, and wondering about the present moment, we put down this speculation. Just take a moment to settle into the present moment, relaxing the mind deeper and deeper with every breath. Welcoming whatever's arising. Friendliness. If you have a meditation that you prefer to do, you're welcome to do that. I'm just going to use the mantra, joy and peace. So if you'd like to use that, you're welcome to. And on the in-breath, say joy. And on the out-breath, say peace. Filling up with joy and letting go with peace. Feeling in joy, feeling out peace. Breathing in joy, like the radiant light of the Buddha. Breathing out peace, letting go of everything. is remembering to be with the mind very gently, like a dear friend. There's 12 minutes to go. Feeling in joy, feeling our peace, joy and peace. It's like the radiant light of the Buddha. Peace is letting go of everything. See if the breath can come deeper and deeper relaxed. If you can sense the joy on the in-breath, and sense the peace on the out-breath. see if you can be aware of the whole of the in-breath and the whole of the out-breath. Just have a look at your mind now and see how it is. Is it more calm and peaceful than before we began? And just to wish ourselves goodwill and all beings goodwill. Gratitude to ourselves for the willingness to practice. When you're ready, open your eyes. Gratitude. I like Ajahn Chah's story. He said, if you got a small apple and a big apple, give the big apple away. And it sounds simple enough, but to actually do that, it requires a whole new way of thinking. So his suggestion was, do it even if it hurts. Because at the time you might go, I really don't want to give this big apple away, you know, just leave me with this one small one. But later on, you reflect on it and you'll be happy that you gave the big apple away. So even if it doesn't feel like the right thing to do, do it anyway. And, you know, because you can see that miserliness in the heart, that kind of wants more for itself. It's very kind of insidious and it's there, and we have this idea that we don't want to be doormats or something, but to be somebody who's truly generous of heart means your friends and your family, and when you find yourself in difficult situations, that you just kind of give, and you give from that, just from the nature of wanting to be somebody who is generous with no concern. I mean, you still have to save for a rainy day and look after, you know, your lives, but to be able to give with no real concern, you know, you're just giving because you want to help people, you want to be kind, and that's the highest way of giving, just giving, expecting nothing in return. And if it wasn't for generous people, we wouldn't be able to wear these robes. Everything that we survive on is given. So I think after I'm a monk for 7 years, then every cell in my body will have been given to me. and that's the heritage we have of the Buddha. And there's an old saying that if somebody becomes enlightened, they have to become a monk or a nun within 7 days, otherwise they die. And whether it's true or not, I don't know. But I think that the reason why is because the highest, that's why in the robes, when people have to give to us in order for us to survive. So it seems to me that karmically, being an arahant, being a fully enlightened being, you have to depend on others' generosity. It's just like a law of karma. And then if you don't want to do that, we had 7 days to ordain after you became enlightened, then it's just tough vickies. The karma can't exist with you not being in robes. So that's how my mind worked out of that puzzle anyway. Whether it's true or not, it's another question.
Or if the monastery says, oh, you have to wait a week or...
You say, too bad, I'm coming now. Just sleep in the kitchen if you have to. So give the big apple and not the small one. That's a really great teaching of Ajahn Chah's. There's a really good retreat that he did actually in America. You can get it on the internet. I think it's called IMS Retreat, and it's really good because he's just teaching these average Americans about meditation and simple things. And he did most of his talk, being American, so he did most of his talk on virtue, trying to drill into the virtue, because in the West we have this kind of thing where we get into meditation, but virtue is a kind of a secondary thing. And in America it's much worse for that than we are here. I think we're in Australia, we're pretty good on the virtue side within our Buddhist community.
Well, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So, generosity. So the Buddha said, if you have good bodily action, good verbal action, good thoughts, so body, speech, and mind, and then if you're generous and thankful, then those four things is enough to be taken to a heavenly rebirth as if you're brought there. So it really boils down to these four things, and then that's what the Buddha's talking about. Associating with the wise. What was it in today's one? Associating with... One should not associate with bad friends, nor with the immoral. So that's basically just saying not to associate with people who are excessive gamblers or excessive drinkers or people who just have a negative bent on their life. Doesn't mean we won't associate with them at all, but don't rely on those people for your spiritual nurturing. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, one psychologist said to me once, it's like you're standing on a table and you're giving your hand down to pull somebody up from the ground, but all that's going to happen is they're going to pull you off the table. Mm-hmm. So you've got to be careful with who you associate with, in that sense that if you want to become good, then like Sariputta and Moggallana, there were two examples of exemplary Buddhist monks at the time of the Buddha, so the Buddha was recommending this shaman to associate with them. Because the idea is, the Buddha is the foremost of best friends, because he's the supremely enlightened one, and then anybody who's following in his footsteps, then they're also worthy of following after. Or people who teach the Dharma, because these are like the cause and effect of getting out of suffering. So in Buddhism, that's really what we're looking at, is the Buddha said that, so say we've got this forest back here which goes for kilometers. If you would pick up a handful of leaves and say, which is more, the leaves in my hand or the leaves in the forest? You'd say, well, the leaves in the forest are much more. And the Buddha said, well, so too is the things that I've known about but haven't taught. So the Buddha is awake and aware of all the knowledge that he came to through all of his multiple past lives and of being supremely enlightened one. Yet he only taught this handful of leaves of all of those things. Because the thing is, if a lot of ideas and a lot of teachings, even though they might be useful, they're not going to lead to the end of suffering. So in Buddhism, when we talk about good friends, it's people who are virtuous, or people who have the wisdom to do with the way leading to the end of suffering. So that's like, in a nutshell, what good friendship is about. So, but also the Dharma is at different levels, so not everybody is going to focus their life on becoming enlightened, but we can all kind of associate with wise people who, you know, take the time to meditate and take the time to develop virtue, and those kind of friends are going to be more nourishing to the spiritual aspects of our lives. So, I wanted to speak just briefly on, so that we have what's called the three characteristics of existence. Does anybody know what they are? Anicca, dukkha, anatta. So there's meant to be these three characteristics of existence. So whatever we look at is meant to be these three things. So anicca is change. So everything that you can think of will change. The change is inevitable. And that change, that's suffering, because you can't hold on to it forever. So if you can't hold on to something, it's just like quicksand. So then that leads to suffering. And then because is changing and is suffering, then you can reason that there's no self there. Because if in Buddhism, what the Buddha was trying to seek out was a permanent self. He tried to see, is there a permanent self in something? All he came across is that there is change, suffering, and no self in all things. So even if we were to have a heavenly rebirth that lasted the length of the universe, at the end of that universe, that body would break up and you'd be reborn somewhere else. So it's like, even if you had a life, billions of years of happiness in the heavenly realm, eventually that would come to an end, because everything is cyclical, which is suffering, basically. So, but there was one lifetime in the suttas where they were meditating in jhanas and they were just reflecting on a dewdrop on a blade of grass, and that was their meditation, and saying, when the morning light arises, the dewdrop is soon to disappear. So the drop of dew on the piece of grass will vanish once the light, the sun rises up. And that was their analogy for life, you know, whatever body we may have, whatever thing that we may have, it will change, just like a drop of dew on a blade of grass is soon to disappear. And they were meant to have really long lifetimes when they were meditating on this as well. So, we're just like a drop of dew. So what's the big problem? So that, those simple kind of contemplations, I think, because I've practiced the elements, so the earth, water, wind, fire meditations, where you visualize the parts of the body or bodies of somebody else, and you break it down into the elements, and you see that there's this, actually in one sutta, the Buddha made a really nice meditation where he was teaching his son Rahula. It's in the Majjhima Nikaya, the middle length discourses. And just like, make your mind like the earth, make your mind like water, make your mind like fire, make your mind like the wind. And what he was meaning by that is that the earth, you can spit on it, you can throw urine on it, you can shout at it, but it's still the earth, you know? And then it's always going to be the earth. It's not going to rise up against you, or fire or whatever. But if you think we've all got elements inside us, and then your husband's giving you a hard time, you can just go, well, it's just fire. It's just earth. You know, it gives you a level of detachment because you see that these things are just fluid. So why
it's more like just wind.
The elements is quite a peaceful way to meditate, because you see, once you get up over the original difficulty of looking at the body, but then you just see it's a process of change, and it's just like, you know, we're all walking around with skeletons inside us, and what is skeletons a symbol of? A symbol of death. Yeah, we have a symbol of death inside of us, yet we never get to know that truth. And then we're all happy that everybody's born, but the closer we get to death, we're more and more frightened of it, you know? But then you get to a certain age, like my grandparents in their 90s, and you're kind of really ready for it by then. Because old age has really kind of taken its toll. But I think that just the simple recollection of the elements, that these things change, you know? Like, just every breath that we take in, every breath that goes out, we're changed, we're a different person now. We're not the same person we were a minute ago. There's different oxygen and molecules inside of our bodies now. We may look similar, but on another level we're completely different. And so where does that change? Sure, we have the same vacuum package that we're used to, and over a long period of time it's hard to notice the difference. But when you don't see a family member for 5 years or 10 years, or you see somebody, the last time you saw them, they were 5 years old, now they're 21. It's like, suddenly it looks different. You're like, whoa, this is a different person I'm looking at. So I think even doing a breath meditation, they're just seeing the change in every breath. You know, and suddenly the breath becomes an interesting object. But we're just so, we're used to the continuity so much that sometimes we don't appreciate those small things. So I think So making the mind like earth. So, you know, you can throw diamonds on it or you can throw nappies on it and it's still going to be the earth. And making the mind like water, what could you get? You could throw money in it, you could throw rotting apples in it and it's still water, it's not going to complain. With the wind, you could blow on toilets, you could blow on, I don't know, on toenails. And it's still the wind. And fire, you can burn anything in fire and it's still fire. And these bodies are just made up of these elements. Yeah, we say they're mine and me and they're going to live forever. Even though we don't think that, that's consciously, that's the underlying thing, because we don't want to die. We've got this name, this label and this body, and we've got these friends and these possessions. And as long as we're here, we don't want to go. And then that causes the suffering. So it's this idea of eternal self that we've hidden somewhere beneath the layers that is a cause of suffering. So the Buddha is, by the contemplations of anicca, dukkha, anatta, it's like lessening those attachments. So when our day of death finally comes, we can just let go of our possessions and our family and our friends and move on to the next life and whatever we'll bring. Because if we cling and hold and grasp, then it's going to be a difficult time. So at least by having little bits of these kind of contemplations over a period of time and with the power of coming from our meditation, then it's much easier to do these things. So we're kind of preparing for death. So when somebody asks you what you're doing, don't tell them you're meditating, tell them you're preparing for death.
I'll get rid of them quicker.
So yeah, there's 4 minutes left, so some time for any questions that anybody has. Well, you're all preparing for death. So, well, last week we spoke about the 10 wholesome and unwholesome courses of action, and we spoke about the simile of the horse. So I'll say that simile again. So it's like just 4 types of horses. There's the horse that just does what it's told when it's asked, and then there's the horse that needs to see the shadow of the whip, and once it sees the shadow of the whip, then it goes into action. And then there's the horse which you got to hit it, and then it goes into action. And then there's the horse where you hit it and hit it and hit it and hit it and it still doesn't do what you want. So which one are we? So I think I'm the one that needs to get hit every once in a while. But coming to action sooner or later. Hopefully I'll be the first one eventually. So
talking about horses, Chana was the groom more or less, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was. Sorry?
Chana was the groom of the Buddha when he was a prince.
He was the
groom.
He was
groom
of the horse.
Yes. He looked after the horses or the horse.
And then it went to his head a bit.
Yeah, apparently.
He got there in the end now. Yeah.
It's funny, I think we've all known Chanas, you know, they weren't the Buddha's groom, but people who were just constantly abusive that way. We've all encountered people like that.
Yeah.
One of the things I really enjoy about these stories is that, you know, the setting is a long time ago in India, but
the content
is very familiar.
It's
just the characters that change.
So 1 minute left, so I'll just recount the 10 wholesome courses of action again and see whether you remember them. So break into body, speech and mind. So it goes no killing, no stealing, no sexual misconduct as body. No lying, no slander, no gossip, no idle chatter, that's speech. And no hatred, no envy, and right view, and that's in mind. And right view is seeing into cause and effect of like the Four Noble Truths, or into the reality. So just like in physics, we say, you know, we look down a microscope and we know this is that. So in Buddhism, when we look down the virtue or the Four Noble Truths, that we can actually say, ah, this is true. So when we kind of see deeply into the teachings, then that's understanding like the Four Noble Truths or the Ten Wholesome Causes of Action, saying that, yes, I see cause and effect for actions is true. And then that would be the basis for stream entry, which is a good place to be. And it's 8 o'clock.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Now let us chant the verses of sharing and aspiration.
Through the goodness arises from my practice, may my spiritual teachers and guides of great virtue, my mother, my father, and my relatives, the sun and the moon, and all virtuous leaders of the world, may the highest gods and the evil forces, celestial beings, guiding spirits of the earth, and the Lord of death, may those who are friendly, indifferent or hostile, may all beings receive the blessings of my life, may they soon attain the threefold bliss, and realize their deathless, through the goodness that arises from my practice, and through this act of sharing, may all desires and attachments strictly cease, and all harmful states of mind, until I realize Nirvana. In every kind of birth, may I have an upright mind, with mindfulness and wisdom, austerity and vigor. May the forces of delusion not take hold, nor weaken my resolve. The Buddha is my excellent refuge, and surpassed is the protection of the Dhamma. The solitary Buddha is my noble Lord. The Sangha is my supreme support. Through the supreme power of all these, may darkness and delusion.